Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Norman Vincent Peale said, "The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want. If they can't find them, make them." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who creates his own circumstances. Today's Playmaker has survived six bank mergers in 19 years. With us today is a CEO who believes his job is to build teams, create a culture, and develop relationships with his customers. This great playmaker is Norm Bagwell. Norm is CEO of Bank of Texas and Executive Vice President of BOK Financial. Norm is responsible for all regional banks, commercial banking, business banking, and treasury services across the company's eight-state footprint. Bank of Texas is a division of BOK Financial Corporation, a $33 billion bank holding company operating in eight southwestern states. Regional banking brands include Bank of Texas, Bank of Arizona, Bank of Albuquerque, Colorado State Bank and Trust, Bank of Arkansas, MoBank, and Bank of Oklahoma. From 1998 to 2007, Norm served as the Dallas president of J.P. Morgan Chase and his predecessor, Bank One Dallas. In this role, he served as senior executive in the market and was responsible for commercial banking activities in the Dallas region. Well, Norm, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Glad to be here, Steve. Thank you.
Well, how does a native of Monroe, Louisiana, become CEO of a group that's one of the largest bank holding companies after surviving six bank mergers in 19 years?
It's been a journey. I think was fortunate to grow up in a small town, and small towns really are great training grounds for banking in general. You really need to know everyone up and down the spectrum, and so you learn to deal with all types of people. Found that when I had the opportunity to move to Dallas to go to SMU, ultimately chose banking. Banking was a good fit for somebody from a small town. Picked up an accounting degree, also had some liberal arts training, learned to speak and write, think. All those things kind of came together and set the stage for an opportunity to go to work for the old M Bank, or Mercantile National Bank, was the predecessor of Bank One and J.P. Morgan. Spent 23 years there. It's been a great ride.
I want to talk about that, but you brought up something else because you graduated from SMU. You planned to be an accountant and tax lawyer originally. You also had a degree in history. Why those degrees, and that what made you make the move to banking?
You know, it's interesting. So banking was probably plan C. Plan A was tax attorney. And so obviously the history piece and law, the ability to see themes, write, organize thoughts, things of that nature, really the liberal arts give you that. The more practical application from a work perspective is really accounting, numbers, X's and O's. And you put the two of those together, those are primarily the skills that the tax attorney world were looking for at that point in time. But just really wasn't something I was interested in. It was maybe something that was planted in my mind at once upon a time and ended up kind of moving away from that. The second thing I was trained for was public accounting. And interviewed with public accounting and realized that was probably not the direction I wanted to go. And fortunately, someone suggested that I take a look at the bank training programs. And that was a really great avenue to enter banking. And the management training programs, get a chance to see the world. And I was a good fit for that and had a chance to go, as I said before, with the M Bank at the time with a great training program. And that really set the stage.
You mentioned something else in a previous statement. I'm going to come back to this later, but it's about leadership. And I took this from an article I read, and this is quoting you: "Writing and speaking and having high energy and a positive attitude. You believe those traits separate the best leaders. Why?"
You know, it's interesting. Being out front, the ability to connect with people, build teams, be genuine, communicate, clarity, kind of what you see is what you get type of approach. I think that the liberal arts have really helped me be comfortable in front of groups, helped me connect with people, et cetera, write effectively and so forth. And then I'll just say for everyone, the one thing we can control every day is our attitude. And if you wake up with a positive view on the world, good things are going to happen. So I've always chose to try to have a positive outlook on things, and you combine that with the ability to speak and be out front, it's been a good combo.
Well, you're talking about communication skills, mm-hmm. and for a leader, for anybody for that matter, that's a big piece of their success. You got into the banking business with MBank in 1985. About 3 years prior to that, there is a situation in Oklahoma City with Penn Square Bank that started a ripple effect throughout the banking system nationally and then internationally. What kind of impact did that have on you starting in the banking industry right after that happened?
Well, one of the interesting things about Penn Square is that my grandfather actually worked for Penn Square. He was older at the time, a senior statesman, and he was working with retail loan officers and teaching them collections and things of that nature. He was in his 80s and really didn't have any knowledge of what was going on. But the point being is that Penn Square was a known institution to me growing up in Louisiana. And so for it to be at the center of a really tough, economic recession in this region, that kind of had some unique interest to me as well. I think that as I think back at that period of time, it was a really, really tough recession here. And there's a couple different ways of looking at it. We know what happened in real estate. We know what happened in energy. We know what happened in banking. But from that, incredible time to learn. Go into banking in 1985, and you're going through this unprecedented situation with the economy and your regional banking, et cetera. And we were seeing things that had never been seen before. And there were some great learnings from that. I think it positioned me well kind of in the days ahead.
Better than having success right off, you dealt with the negatives and had to work through those.
Yeah, I believe that the MBank did not have a positive financial quarter maybe for my first 4 or 5 years. It was a pretty rough run. So you're thinking about survival. You're thinking about positioning and businesses and trying to basically kind of look at it as triage more so than building a brand. You're looking at saving a brand. And those are really interesting times for many of us that were in banking at that time.
Well, you survived, as I mentioned earlier, six mergers. Bank One won the auction for MBank when it failed. You were with Bank One. Chase purchased Bank One. You've been CEO of Bank of Texas, I believe, since 2008. Mm-hmm. Talk about that progression, if you can, in a short period of time, because that's just over 20 years altogether.
You know, it's interesting when you said that there were six or so, each one of them you learn something different. Some of them are in-market mergers where people are on top of each other and you're having to put organizations together. So an application of that would be the old Texas American Team Bank, Ron Steinhardt and his crew, merging with Harvey Mitchell and the Bank One squad in the early 90s, in-market merger, putting that together. Fascinating learning experience from the standpoint of building a team, trying to remake a culture, et cetera. Many of the other mergers along the way were the combination of banks, and you had different impacts depending on where that bank was. So obviously First Chicago was part of that. National Bank of Detroit was a portion, Valley National out in Arizona. But each one of them, you learn something along the way. But the big deal, obviously, was bringing Bank One and JPMorgan Chase together under Jamie Dimon's leadership, and it was a fascinating evolution of bringing the banks together and built one of the formidable franchises in DFW.
You mentioned Ron Steinhardt. I believe he was a mentor of yours.
Yes.
What did you learn from him? How did he help you get to where you are today?
Ron and others have been great mentors and sounding boards from the standpoint. It's interesting when you have mentors, what is it that relationship is like? And Ron is very transparent. He's to the point. He can see clearly. He can add value or maybe see perspectives that I was never able to see. If I had questions or concerns, he was comfortable talking me through those, et cetera. The other thing is that, the Ron Steinhardts and the Harvey Mitchells and Terry Kellys and Ty Millers and Larry Helms, they decided it one day I might be the guy. And so each of them have invested in me along the way, and I'm very grateful for that, because without their mentorship, not sure where the kid from Louisiana ends up.
We're speaking with Norm Bagwell. Norm is CEO of Bank of Texas and Executive Vice President of BOK Financial. On the website, which is bankoftexas.com, you have a message from our CEO. And it says there, in part, some banks have product sales goals. At Bank of Texas, our goal is to form meaningful, lasting relationships that help our clients meet their financial goals. Relationships. Talk about that.
Well, so it's interesting, moving from, to the previous question, moving from J.P. Morgan Chase in the Dallas region and moving to Bank of Texas and then having to build a business that could compete with my former self. It's kind of an interesting concept when you think about it. And so what we've kind of brought here is the concept of, it's a big bank, got close to $80 billion in assets under management and service in our wealth platform. Most people don't know that. Obviously, big treasury management business, commercial bank, et cetera. So the sophistication of the people and the product offering is pretty strong for a regional bank. But conversely, how do you do it in a way where it's a big bank that can act small? And so it's boots on the ground. It's building relationships with people. If you want the CEO in your office to help work a deal, you do that. It's answering the telephone when it rings and all those little things to where you try to make a bank feel like it should feel. And so if we're in a position to where we can kind of build that type of brand in the marketplace where clients don't get lost here and they feel like they have an advocate, but someone who can deliver for them, it's a great combination. It's a lot easier said than done. But I think one of the things I'm most proud of is our ability to team here and bring people in a common culture that we deliver solutions to clients in a way that feels right.
As I mentioned at the beginning, you are working on that culture, making sure that comes through. And you've been a banker and involved at a senior level in Dallas for over 25 years. What are your observations about Dallas, the market, and its evolution? We've talked a little bit about that, but over time, how has that changed?
It's really fascinating because people don't always think of DFW as 63 different little cities. I mean, from the standpoint, not little anymore, but obviously we think of Dallas and Arlington and Fort Worth and Irving, but now we've got Frisco and Plano and go all the way out to Prosper and Salina. You can go, you know, to Garland and Terrell, et cetera. And you go west to Waxahachie and Mansfield. So you throw it all together, it's 63 unique spots. And so when you think about the growth that's taken place, we have come together as a region to basically take our core strengths, which, you know, everybody knows, the cost of living, you know, tort reform has been in place here, pro-business climate, all those different things that have helped bring folks to this spot. So I think of us as a decentralized group of civic leaders and or cities to one today that has their game organized with a great message, tremendous momentum, and working as one to bring business and people to make Dallas, Fort Worth, the place to be from a business perspective. We didn't have it organized that way at another day and time. And I think I've told the story before of being in a meeting in the early 90s and talking about the big goal was for downtown Dallas to have another retailer on Main Street, or have somebody have the chance to go outside and eat lunch above ground. And so you look at what's happened with the arts complex here and in Fort Worth. You look at the sports assets, the entertainment assets, corporate relocations, et cetera. Woodall Rogers is a park, you know. Uptown, Midtown are all in play. And none of those things were on the table at the time, but it all took place because of people focused in on the need following the Boeing headquarters not coming here, and ultimately rallied as a region and was paying big dividends today.
As I'm listening between the lines, you were very actively involved in the Dallas Regional Chamber. You mentioned the number of changes in the entire area. Do you see your role as CEO of Bank of Texas as an individual that is, through Bank of Texas and BOKF, that you are working on changing the area?
I think from the standpoint of what I love about Dallas is, and back to where we started the conversation is, Dallas is a melting pot. Most of the people here are from somewhere else. You can sit around a table at dinner and you ask how many people grew up in Dallas and you'd be surprised at the number, right? So that's the uniqueness and greatness of who we are here. And what the city offers is the chance to get involved. And so if you choose to get involved in arts or culture or education, universities, et cetera, you have the chance to do that. And so from that perspective, I believe, and we believe at Bank of Texas, that we're a corporate citizen. And while we're building our business and building our bank and taking care of our clients and our shareholders, we also live and work here. And so it's our job to lean in and get involved. So as a result of that, I've been in a position for many years to get involved in different types of things, try to help move the ball forward a little bit, and then our employees outreach as well. So being a good corporate citizen, I think, is a theme you'll see across all the businesses that are here. Business is the common language, and building a great community is something that we all strive to do.
Big part of the business, especially in the state of Texas, is energy. BOK Financial and Bank of Texas are experts in the energy business, but many banks aren't, especially with the recent downturn. What's unique, and how is this approach positioned you and the bank for today's energy environment?
I am very proud of who we are as an energy bank, and we've been in the energy business for over 100 years through our predecessors, et cetera. And what happens is that it's a commodity, obviously oil and gas, a commodity. It goes up and down in prices. And so I can remember $12 to $15 oil, and I can remember $1.25, $1.35 gas. Nobody's real excited about energy at that point. But I also can remember $144 oil and $12, $13 gas, and everybody's excited. So when you look at the ups and downs of that business, what separates those that play full-time sport here? BOKF has been in the energy business, and we have ridden through all the cycles. We continue to lend and bank our clients through those cycles. And there's a day in time there might have been 50 people that said they're in the 50 banks that said they're in the energy business. And I can remember a tough time after the financial downturn, maybe six. And so it's a short group. But what allows us to do that is long-term commitment, understanding of the cycles, internal systems and processes that allow us to do that, great expertise all up and down from the board all the way down into the field. It allows us to kind of break through the noise and focus on the attributes of the business. And so it has been a real key player for us. And I think it's probably what we're known best for, is one of being the best energy banks in the country. Very proud of that.
Again, listening between the lines, as I was hearing you say that, you talked about, you mentioned boots on the ground, you talked about people, I mentioned relationships, you mentioned that on your website. There's a distinction between lenders and bankers. So what's the difference or point that you're trying to make by using the term banker versus lender? Because I think this ties in with relationships again.
Yeah. So what's interesting, if back to the point about Dallas, Texas. And so if you think of Dallas in the 80s, there were a lot of individuals, family-owned businesses, et cetera. You could see the factory. You could see the cars, the trucks, whatever. Think about the Glazers and the Olmsted Kirks and the Pollocks and all those different great family-owned businesses. But what's evolved over time is this economy is different. We've got a tech hub. We've got transportation capability in the logistics centers. We've got life sciences that are here. We've got a lot of service businesses, et cetera. And so it's no longer necessarily about property, plant, and equipment in the building. It's now maybe more about revenue cycle and payments and basically being a bank. And so if you're a lender, that suggests you're one-dimensional. We make loans. Maybe take a deposit. If we're a banker, we're in the solutions business. We sit down with clients. We understand their whole program of where their pain points are, et cetera. And so whether it's a retirement benefit issue, a payment systems issue, a treasury issue, or, oh, by the way, could still be lending and capital needs, et cetera. But the banker is a much broader term. So we view ourselves as bankers providing solutions into the market. Lending may be the most important product, but that's not who we are, and that's what is reflected in our business mix, too. So if you look at us from our revenue perspective, it's very balanced. Fees, lending, deposits, et cetera, probably one of the most balanced revenue setups in the whole industry, and that's something that I think that the banker mentality leads us to do.
So because of that, what I see your bankers as being consultants to the clients, and you are a larger bank operating as a smaller bank, one-on-one through your bankers. Is that correct?
Right. So one of the things that's been interesting is there's an external group called Phoenix Heck. Phoenix Heck does a study of large banks, regional banks, smaller banks, and they evaluate kind of your treasury services interface with your client. And we're an A-plus rated bank, and what they describe to us is that sales consultative service over the top from the standpoint of their people that help us and hold our hand, et cetera, go above and beyond, which is fantastic. Technological platform, very current and active. By the way, we've got a relationship manager or a banker who's quarterbacking the team, and you bring it all together, I get a great solution, but service is a key component of that. So back to that big bank, act small, sophisticated people delivering banking in a way that feels right. That's how we're winning. That's our differentiation.
And I hear that as part of what I mentioned at the top of the show about you changing the culture for Bank of Texas. You've given us some talks, and I received some information about your 10 to win lessons in leadership, which include leadership knows no boundaries, take the hard road, which is semper via arduo, the fundamentals of our success, be yourself, never try to be something you are not. You have a specific focus on what you see leadership as. So do you see your people as employees of Bank of Texas as leaders for their clients?
Absolutely. I think if you get to the core of what banking is, you want to be able to trust your banker. You're giving them information, you're asking them to solve problems and so forth. And because of what happened on Wall Street through the financial downturn, that kind of went up and down. And so when you get to some of those fundamentals, one would be, Arduro is essentially take the hard road, meaning make the right decisions, character matters, stand tall in tough places, always do what's right, even if it's hard. And if you can follow that path, you'll have a stand for trust and credibility, et cetera. You know, beyond that, I look at it from the standpoint of where do we want our people to be? High character, fit well within the organization. And it's not just at Bank of Texas. It's all through our shop. You know, we're looking for team players, high character, high energy, strong attitude, and individual leadership. You can be a leader anywhere you want to be, okay? You can be at the very lowest part of the company, but you can show leadership qualities that day, solving that problem, et cetera. Or you could be at the top of the org chart and not provide any leadership. And so what happens is it's pockets within the company that comes together to kind of create the culture that you want. And so what we encourage is leadership with no boundaries. Wherever you are in the org chart, you've got a chance to make a difference and impact a client, a colleague, a situation, et cetera. So we encourage people to do that. That creates a great foundation for us to kind of then export that to our clients to where they see us as an organization that's trustworthy and deliver the right people. Can be our advocates, and we work well with them. So,
then part of your leadership concept is also to allow your people to have ownership in what they're doing for their clients. And in addition to the hard way, it's whatever it takes to help them become more successful.
Yeah, I think we use a term here: ownership versus free agent. You know, we like the concept of ownership. And ownership, you know, this is your bank, this is your business, it's your entrepreneurial opportunity, it's your interface with clients, et cetera. And be an advocate for your client. Find those different solutions that we offer, solve their problem, and do that in a way where you can maybe take some of the barriers out or whatever. But look, our industry is known for, you know, having process and procedures. I'm not going to say that we don't have that, but we do try to use people to overcome a lot of those traditional regulations and requirements that are known in banking and try to make it just a little bit better for the client to ease the pain of interfacing with a financial institution. And so that in itself is leadership with your client.
So coming out of the Great Recession, were there traits or characteristics, were there lessons learned as you watched your clients navigate unprecedented market turmoil?
So, yes, I did begin my tenure here at Bank of Texas right at the beginning of the financial downturn. And obviously the opportunity to navigate troubled waters, actually this was unprecedented, and even the 80s paled into this in comparison. But certain things that really stood out to me in the 80s, maybe in the dot-com downturn as well, some of the liquidity challenges from long-term capital markets and that kind of stuff, and then also this financial downturn, there are certain characteristics that I've kind of written down to say who wins in a scenario like this. And so what you see is strong and deep management teams, decisive in their actions, traditionally strong balance sheets, not overly levered, with liquidity available for a rainy day or access to capital, and the gives them the best hand possible to navigate through tough times. And so what I found is the weaker programs would be the opposite of that, overly leveraged, weak management teams, things of that nature. But there are definitely a class of leadership and company with certain characteristics that really stand through these tough times.
So should someone want to find out more about how you do that with Bank of Texas, how would they get a hold of someone here?
They're welcome to call me, and I'll hand them off to the right person.
And the website is?
www.bankoftexas.com would be the best way to get in touch with us.
Well, Norm, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Glad to join you today.
You are definitely a playmaker, and a playmaker is somebody that makes things happen. We just spoke with Norm Bagwell. Norm is CEO of Bank of Texas. He's also Executive Vice President of BOK Financial. Again, thank you to Norm again for being a Playmaker. It's been great having Norm on the show, and thanks to all of you for listening and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.